W4DJW sending out the club announcements. W4DJW clear.
W4DJW and 4HHC. First class, Dave.
Hey, Warren. Glad you like it. How you holding up?
Oh, we're holding up fine. We're trying to deliver something here for my wife's got a table in the group Bible study at the church. And she always does an Easter basket. Well, when the Easter rolled around, there was no Bible study. So we're just getting around to try to deliver a couple of them over.
Well, that's good. All kinds of changes going on. We won't be the same when we come out of this thing as we were before. We'll know a lot more. We'll be educated on this stuff coming out the other side. They're saying it's going to be, what, some states a month, some states two?
Sure, things will not be the same. I would like to think that we'll get some of our liberties back. Over.
Yeah, I'm thinking we're going to all be a lot more cautious than we were before. We'll think about things a lot more than we used to about that, a permanent marker.
Doubt about it. It's, I mean, who would have ever dreamed it up? You know, it's very, very different experience in my whole lifetime.
I think it's pretty safe to say in everybody's lifetime. I don't think there's anybody that was around during the last plague. I don't remember which one it was. I wasn't here. But you think about the Black Plague and things like that that happened back in the medieval times. You don't think about those kind of things happening now, but here we are.
That's very true. And, you know, the other thing, let me know when it's time to turn. The other thing is, you know, you talk on the radio and you talk to other countries and it's like, okay, they're our neighbor because they're going through the same thing.
Yeah, we're kind of fortunate in that respect, being able to talk on amateur radio, on VHF, UHF, HF, all the different bands, all the different modes. Everybody else is limited to what a service provider can provide them. We have no limits except for our band locations and our output power, really.
True. Very true. Well, good to chat with you. We're pulling up here at one location. But good to chat with you, and I really appreciate all the work y'all are doing on the repeater and everything. It's first class, great example for other repeater groups.
Well, I appreciate that, Warren. You stay safe. Good talking to you. W4DJW.
4HHC.
BW, KD2BNG. So what was that automated thing I just heard? I just caught the tail end of it.
That's an announcement for the club. For any club announcements that we want to make, we can pull them up at any time to listen to them, to see what they are. And you can submit a request online to have an announcement added.
Lynette, online, I think I heard something, you were saying something like that. I mean, you know, not that, yeah, no, you've done a lot of good work on that.
Well, appreciate that, Glenn. How you holding up?
Let's see, I'm at Target to get more CO2 cylinders for the soda maker. Aside from that, I guess I'm going home. There's nothing really to do and nothing nothing to do and nothing to do when you get there. So, as we're talking to the rest of the world, we got everything here. We got UHF, we got VHF, we got HF, we got F, we got anything you want. But you never know when these communication capabilities are going to become important. Heaven help us if we're the last line of communication, because that's really going to be inconvenient.
Yeah, that would be difficult, having people lined up at your door. I don't think it'll come to that. But we do have options that don't involve paying a provider for it, all right? We just have to have the hardware.
Long Island, I would drive to, Deborah's parents lived in Freeport. I'd drive over there for Sunday dinner. There was this one guy who had an entire antenna farm on the roof of his house. I don't know how many there were. There were about six of them. There was a quad. There was a log periodic. There was at least three or four others. I always thought it would be a good joke to go over there one day, knock on his door. Hey, man, our cable is out. Can we watch the game here?
Yeah, well, I hope he had a good sense of humor. I guess you never got the nerve up to do it.
Actually, at one time, he took down three of the antennas. Maybe he had too many of them. At one time, there was at least four of them on roof mounts. So he took down all but one or two of them. I guess the neighbors were complaining.
Well, I've only got a couple that are outside, and you'd have to struggle to see them from the center of the road over the top of the house. But then there's a whole bunch of them in the attic.
Congress or somebody recently say homeowners associations can't really complain too much about that. Maybe I'm wrong. There was some bill in Congress that benefited the amateur radio people in that it reduces the number of complaints like homeowners associations can make. Oh, I might have read that wrong.
Well, I remember hearing something about it, but I don't remember what it was, or I never did go look it up to see to what extent. Hey, changing the subject, do you have any old spare computers laying around, cold as ice, not crunching any numbers?
Portables, yeah. How many do you want? A couple of notebook computers that aren't doing anything. Maybe even a desktop system that I can sort of, I could probably, what do you want to use it for?
I don't want to use them. I want you to use them. You ever done any distributed computing number crunching for groups like Rosetta at Home? Have you ever heard of that, or Bionic, or any of that stuff?
At Home, or SETI at Home, or any one of those other dozen or so. For that matter, there's servers that are sitting around. What does the server get to do all day? I probably got three or four machines that I could that I'm actively using, and others that I could take out of storage if I had to.
So we're crunching numbers for Rosetta at Home. We're building a team. A team used to be a pretty big team a long time ago. That's like 15, 20 years ago. It used to be huge. And it's dwindled really far down. But they're trying, the guys, there's like 8 or 12 of them that are trying to get it started back up again. So they reached out to me a few days ago, and I just recently pulled a bunch of old computers out of the dust. Some of them I had to get a new hard drive for. Some of them I put a MSATA USB drive in the side because I didn't want to lose the operating system that was there, and just booted off of that into Linux. And the team is on Bionic, B-O-I-N-C, if you can Google that. And our team is called Team Sci-Fi. There's only a dozen of us, but we're looking for other people to join the team and start crunching numbers. I had a new hard drive come in today for my wife's old bio. And the week before that, I did something. I put a hard drive in my old XPS Dell laptop, and they're both crunching numbers now for Rosetta at Home is the name of the project. So Bionic is a tool that's used to run projects, and the project is called Rosetta at Home, and we're just looking for more people to join the team. You don't make any money off of it or anything like that. You're just contributing to finding the proteins, interesting things about proteins that scientists can use to break down COVID-19.
There was a bunch of distributed computing projects. The one that I mentioned, SETI at Home, and there was another one, Folding at Home, which was running a bunch of protein folding algorithms with how many quadrillions of calculations those need. And SETI at Home would look through raw data coming from one of the telescopes looking for something that might be a pattern. I have computers that are either doing nothing or that are doing very little. What operating systems and the software do you need?
they have a lot of them. That you can crunch them on Windows 10, Windows 7, Linux, Ubuntu, Debian, you name it. They've even got one out for Android and one for ARM processors. So it's really more about the processor, the operating system combo, and whatever you have, you can put to work on it. Some of them, do, like Linux, is probably the most efficient, so you get the most points if you, like, I had an old Dell desktop that was a tower, 8 CPU machine, runs at like 2.3 gigahertz or something like that. And I was running on Windows, but it wasn't making a lot of headway. So I just formatted Linux on a USB drive and said boot from the USB before you boot from the internal hard drive. And I just plugged it into it, and it's been running off of that mSATA disk, right? It's solid state, and it's like the size of a matchbox. It's been running off of that since I started up, and it's doing a whole lot better than it did on Windows.
Okay. Now, I don't really have any machines that are much less than about 10 years old. Let's see. There's a quad-core Core i5 system. It's running Mac OS Snow Leopard, but I'll change it back over to Linux if I need something, if there's no software. Let's see. There's an old Dell Dimension system from about also 13 years ago. There's a couple of laptop systems I could use. Older Dell systems that, again, I don't really know if I have anything which is very much less than 9 or 10 years old. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. What I don't have in single CPU capacity, I'll make up in network capacity. I'll have three machines on the network doing it.
Yeah, and the number crunching, I mean, you don't have to have, all of my computers are pretty old. In fact, this project got me inspired to upgrade because it's been 7 or 8 years, and it was like 7 or 8 years before that. So my old Dell desktop that is being the 8-core machine, it's probably when 8 cores just came out, right? That long ago. I mean, it's old, but it's doing pretty good. I mean, it's keeping up with the other guys on the team. Along with, I got a couple of Raspberry Pis that have 4 processors each, and they're crunching. They can run 3 processors simultaneously with 4 gigs of RAM, and then the fourth one has to wait for memory. But I mean, it's better than nothing. You're crunching numbers. You're working work units. That's what's important.
I'll take that old Dell desktop system if I'm not using Windows. Well, actually, yeah, Windows 7. Yeah, we can use Windows 7. There's a Dell Dimension. I forget what it is. It's a Dell Optiplex. It's a Dell Optiplex 755. It's maybe 12 years old. Dual core. Core Duo or something like that. It's a decent enough machine. And it's just sitting there doing nothing in case I ever need to run Windows 7. So we'll do something with that. I'll get a couple of laptops out of storage and get them working. Yeah, I can help you with that. Send me an email on what I need to do.
I'll forward you the same email that was forwarded to me to get me started up and running. He kind of jumps all over the place, but you can read it enough times and you get the gist of what it is he's talking about. Because I could send you down the wrong road because I'm just getting started back into it, so I'm no authority on it. I just figured out how to do one, and I've got 10 computers crunching now. Some of them only have 2 processors, and some of them have 8 processors, everything in between, and a couple of Raspberry Pis, which they don't do much, but combined all together, they do quite a bit. So every little computer that you add, especially those, they don't take much electricity at all. Now the 8-core, they can consume electricity, but it's fun. I'll pull you in. I'll send you the email that he sent me to get you started, and then I'll pull you into an email thread once you sign up, and I know who you are, so I can tell the group of people who you are when I pull you in, so they'll know who that they can look on the team stats webpage and see your ID when you decide on what your name's going to be when you join up.
I don't know if I've sent you email correspondence or not. It's my call sign, KD2BNG@yahoo.com. I don't know if we've corresponded or not, but yeah, send me whatever I need to participate, and you know, I'll just to put another switch on the network and get a bunch more Ethernet cables and plug in three or four more machines. Yeah, I can do that.
And any of your other old programming buddies, what they're trying to do is get the team started back up again. But any of you, if you've got any old programming buddies that you could email, that's how they're finding people, is they're going back through their old emails and finding people that might be interested in something like that. Especially the thing that's got everybody hyped up is COVID-19. And before our team, I think, cracked one of those encryption algorithms, took us a year, but we were the team that cracked it. So I think that was our peak. I think it was a 109 encryption algorithm back when they were that low. That tells you how old the team is.
It's with like a 40-bit or 64-bit key size or old DES or some other useless encryption algorithm or what was the other one that was fairly weak? There was DES and there was another one that...
Your memory's better than mine. I was looking for that email I was going to forward you. I don't remember. It's too long ago for me. I have to push stuff out to get new stuff in, so that stuff's been long gone for a while.
I remember who it was, and there was one public key encryption algorithm that was cracked. Well, you know, again, these were secure algorithms 20 years ago. You know, not so much now. But, and I'm sure that's probably how it was done with, you know, some sort of distributed computer farm.
I think I just found that email to send to you. Give me just a second, and I'm going to go ahead and forward it to you before I forget your email address.
My call sign at yahoo.com, and that address is usually only ever used for that purpose, so it doesn't get a lot of junk mail to it.
Okay, it should be in your inbox any time. W4DJW.
Let's see, zoom it out here on smartphone. Okay, from Van Smith, vsmith23@gmail, Dave Watson at Charter, teamscifi.com, our old forum. All right, this will give me the links to everything I need.
Yeah, he gets to that part later on. He was just telling me about it up front. So the first few paragraphs, you can breeze over. And then he says, if you want to get started from that point down, those are the instructions.
Okay, I see that. Rosetta, Bionic, BakerLab.org. The URL to the Bionic client to connect to the Rosetta project. I'll figure out what it runs on. Probably any operating system, we don't care. I got Windows, I got Mac OS, I got Linux. Doesn't matter to me. I'll take the most powerful system and I'll run Linux on it if I have to.
That's the thing. I don't know if you can, if you've got a Linux system, you probably know how to use DD, but I pulled the hard drives out and I stuck them on a USB connector and plugged them into a Unix box and did a DD of the whole drive over to a file, right, and just stored the whole thing off so that if I ever want to go back to that operating system, I can. I can do DD in the opposite direction and get it back. And then I just wiped it out and put a fresh load of Debian Linux on there. I don't know which Linux you like the best, but all of them or most of them, I guess, have the ability to install that. You can install Bionic from the command line with sudo apt-get install, and then the name of the client. I can send you a thread that I sent somebody else on how to set up a Raspberry Pi, and it'll tell you how to get the Bionic client started. And once you get it started, somewhere you're going to want to be able to monitor it without having to log into all of those boxes. So that Bionics has a manager that you run on one box. And if you set up the way I'm describe it for a Raspberry Pi in the email that I'm going to send you, it doesn't have to be a Raspberry Pi, but if you set it up like that, if you edit those three files that are in there, it'll let you connect from one machine to all the other machines, you know, with an individual window for each machine, and you can monitor their progress individually. W4DJW.
PNG. You know what I do have? It was one of these things I sponsored on Kickstarter. I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. It's called Atomic Pi. It's Intel 86-based version of the Raspberry Pi. I mean, I don't care. I assume it runs, you know, some kind of Pi Linux or... so, you know, the architecture doesn't matter. I'm sure I can... Raspberry Pi runs some Linux version, right?
They've got a lot of different operating systems that they support. You can run Windows on a Raspberry Pi if you want to. I don't think it'd be very efficient because it's so bloated, but Linux runs the best that I've found. But I haven't experimented a lot with other operating systems on the Raspberry Pi. But, one of my machines is the machine that I use, which is an 8-core processor, but I don't want to give it all of my 8 cores, so I run a virtual machine, and it's running Windows, and I don't want to run it in Windows. So I've got a virtual machine running and I gave it 6 of the processors. And it's got the Raspberry Pi operating system loaded on that virtual machine running in Windows, and it's got 6 cores that are processing the stuff. So I've still got 2 cores. With 2 cores, my machine's still pretty fast. You can do all kinds of combinations of stuff like that. You can get very creative.
Right now is that quad-core Core i5 that I built probably about 10 years ago. It's running Mac OS Snow Leopard, which is hopelessly obsolete, but I just keep it as that because there's a couple of Macintosh formatted hard drives in there. But, you know, it's a server and it runs remote virtual machines. But I'll run Linux or Windows on the thing if I have to.
Well, that's the beauty of adding more and more people to the team. The more you get, the more experience like that you get in the team, the more people learn different ways of doing that. They haven't got a website set up yet. They're talking about setting. We used to have a website, and it had all the stats and everybody who was in it and all of that stuff on it. They don't have that anymore. But that's one of the things they're talking about restarting.
You came out of a lot of those distributed computing projects. The first one I remember was SETI. You know, it would take the raw data from whatever radio telescope, and it would break it up into, you know, divide the task among a million computers, let's say, and have everybody looking for something in the radio static that looks like a pattern. And there was another one that was doing something similar for hunting for exoplanets. You know, taking the raw orbital data from various stars and trying to see if there's a perturbation in the movement of the star that suggests there might be a planet. So it was a couple of projects like that.
Yeah, I crunched a lot of work units for SETI, a ton of work units. And I vaguely remember what it is you're talking about. But one of the things with this one, with Rosetta at Home, those scientists that use the data, they log on to the forum sometimes, and they chat with the... It's mostly developers that are on there, but there's other people that aren't developers that do this. But they'll chat with the people that are crunching the numbers and just give them interesting information about what they're doing. Because normally, you don't get to talk to either the astronomer or the scientist or whoever it is that's using all of this data that you're crunching for them. But that's the nice thing about this one. I've been browsing back through history, looking at the boards, just seeing what's going on, trying to catch back up with it because I've been out of it for so long. And I see you in there where they're telling them what they do with that data, right? Mostly about Like sometimes they'll abort a work unit, and somebody's spent 8 hours crunching the numbers on a work unit, and then it comes up on their screen that the project aborted that one. And it's because somebody else got the data to them first, and then they ask them, well, why did you send it to more than one? Why didn't you wait for me? And they said, because you were the backup. They were the primary in case they quit, because they had already quit one time. So you learn all kind of interesting stuff like that from these people. So I think the guys that use the data are getting a lot more involved with the people that are crunching the data now.
Plain vanilla C code, and it's running on Unix. I'll do development. I can still write code. That was my thing. I did a lot of the back end code on Unix systems, you know, for like client server stuff. And I still remember how to write programs in C. I still remember the 100 ways to kill yourself in C. I can still do it.
Well, that's kind of like, I mean, there's not a lot of, not compared to what there used to be, there's not a lot of C programmers left, because so much Java and now Go as a programming language. A lot of new languages out there. I think that the mainstream, the younger guys that are coming up, are grabbing onto, because they can do so much more with in such a shorter period of time. But they require more hardware to be able to do it. Whereas if you go back to C, you don't have near as much hardware, and you can get as much done. So that's one of the beauties of knowing an old language versus the new languages. The new languages are like three generations, well, no more, four, five, six generations away from the CPU. So they've got a lot more processing to do to get down there to the CPU to actually make something happen. So that's good. I still do C programming too, but I don't do it for work.
Well, you know, then again, it's a question of efficiency. Now, nowadays, it's not like when I used to do programming 20, 30 years ago. Yeah, maybe closer to 30 years ago. You know, now you got the machine cycles to burn. So, if a programming language offers you more built-in features and it's easier to use, and it's not especially efficient, that's probably not a bad trade-off.
Exactly. And that's where industry, you know, competition and time to market, that's where they benefit. They greatly benefit from that capability. Just get the code out there, right? Get it working. I don't care if you have to have six processors to run it versus one in the past, right? Beat the other people to market, because that software is going to become obsolete when new ideas and new things come out. So it's got a very short lifespan compared to before. Back when I was writing code for Michelin, we spent 2 years, 3 years to write an algorithm, and it got used for 10 years. So, but not that way anymore. If its lifespan is a year and a half or 2 years, it's done good.
It'll be used after more than 10 years, after more than 20 years. It depends what it is. I'll bet there's billions of lines of Fortran code out there, written, let's say, during the 1960s. That everyone just, because, you know, you can still get a Fortran compiler for most machines. So, yeah, you know, we have this numerical analysis stuff or orbital mechanics or stuff that NASA wrote or whatever, and nobody really wants to rewrite it. Nobody understands exactly what it did in the first place, but I want to still be able to use it.
Yeah, both Fortran and COBOL. There's millions of lines of COBOL that are still being exercised every day. W4DJW. Well, Glenn, I got to hop downstairs. I finished cutting the grass a little while ago, and I came up here to check on my number crunchers. They all look good, but I am thirsty. I'm out of water.
I'm parking lot and burning the engine, so let me get out of here and go do something. But nice talking to you, and I'll get to work on that. W4DJW, KD2BNG. I'll be clear.
All right, Glenn, looking forward to seeing you on the boards. KD2BNG, W4DJW, clear.